All right, welcome to another deep dive here. Today we're looking at a pretty interesting case, one that brings up some pretty, tough questions. You know, Baltimore City DSSV Beltnet. Basically, this case kind of throws a wrench in things when it comes to parental rights, child welfare, and good old Fifth Amendment rights. You know, the whole self-incrimination thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, so we're going to try to figure this out. Can you actually say no to a court order, you know, like when they say bring your child in, if you think it might, well, get you in trouble, you know, legally speaking?
Yeah, this case is, it's a good one for seeing this sort of push and pull we always have in the legal system, right? Like, how do we make sure individual rights are protected? We're talking about the Fifth Amendment here, a pretty big deal. But then on the other side, you've got the state, and their job is to protect people who can't protect themselves, especially kids, right? So it's like, how do these two things work together when they clash? It's like, you're required to do something that might end up being used against you later. That's heavy stuff.
No kidding. Okay, so let's set the stage here. It all starts with this little guy, Maurice M., just a baby, 3 months old, and he keeps ending up in the hospital. And we're not talking sniffles here. This is serious stuff, multiple times. And he's hurt, like really hurt. That's a huge red flag, right?
Oh, yeah, for sure. So the people at the hospital, they're watching, and they see his mom, Jacqueline Buchnight, and let's just say her way of handling him is causing some concern. They start to think, maybe this is an accidental, you know? So that's when Baltimore City Department of Social Services, BCDSS, steps in. It's February 1987.
And right away, the court's like, nope, Maurice is not staying with his mom. They place him in shelter care. Talk about a big decision.
Right. They have to think about the kid's safety first and foremost. But hold on, there's more to the story. Later on, Maurice is actually sent back to live with Buchnight. But, and this is a big but, it's under this order, you know, protective supervision. They're saying, okay, you can have him back, but there are rules, a whole bunch of conditions. You mess up, he's gone.
So it's like a second chance, but with like a really tight leash.
You got it. The court is basically saying, we're giving you another shot, but you've got to prove you can keep this kid safe. These rules, these are non-negotiable.
But, and I think our listeners can guess where this is going, things don't exactly go according to plan, do they?
Not exactly. Auchnight, well, she doesn't meet those conditions. So BCDSS is back in court in April 1988, and they're saying, take two is over. We need to remove Maurice again.
And this is where things get really sticky, legally speaking. The court tells Auchnight, bring Maurice to court. But she flat out refuses. Not only will she not bring him, she won't even say where he is.
Talk about high stakes. This is a direct challenge to the court's authority. And that refusal, that landed her in civil contempt. Now, before we go any further, it's super important to be clear about what civil contempt means, you know, for anyone listening. It's not like a criminal charge. Not exactly. It's more like the court saying, listen, you've got to do this specific thing. And until you do, there are going to be consequences.
It's like they're holding her feet to the fire until she complies with the order.
Right. And Buchnight, she fires back with a big legal argument, the Fifth Amendment.
The right to remain silent, the right to not incriminate yourself. We all know that one from TV.
Exactly. But here's how she applied it to this situation. She said, look, if I'm forced to either bring Maurice to court or tell you where he is, that information could be used against me. She was afraid that by complying with the court order, she'd be giving the state evidence they could use to charge her with a crime related to Maurice's injuries. Basically, she felt like they were forcing her to testify against herself, which is a big no-no under the Fifth Amendment.
This isn't just about disobeying a court order. This is about fundamental constitutional rights. So this case, it starts working its way up through the court system, right?
Yeah, and it gets messy. At first, the juvenile court is like, nah, your Fifth Amendment argument doesn't fly here. But then the Maryland Court of Appeals, they actually take Boutnight's side. They agree her Fifth Amendment rights were violated.
So now we've got two different courts saying two different things. That's not exactly ideal, is it?
Well, not ideal at all. This is a big legal disagreement. That's why the big kahuna, the U.S. Supreme Court, steps in. They're like, all right, everyone, time to settle this.
So this is it, the big showdown. The question before the Supreme Court, does a parent under the Fifth Amendment have the right to refuse a court order to produce their child, especially in a child welfare case? We're talking about a clash of some pretty foundational principles here. Individual rights versus the state's responsibility to protect a child. That's got to be a tough one to decide.
Absolutely, a real nail biter. And like you said, this isn't just about Buchnight and Maurice anymore. This decision will affect how the Fifth Amendment is applied in similar situations all over the country. And, well, spoiler alert, the Supreme Court ultimately ends up siding with the state in this case.
They said no dice to Balkenite's Fifth Amendment claim. So let's break down why they made that decision. What was their reasoning?
The Supreme Court, they're not just going to say yes or no and call it a day. They write these detailed opinions explaining their thought process. And this opinion, written by Justice O'Connor, well, it hinges on two main points.
Okay, so let's take those two points one at a time. What was the first one?
The first one is all about custodial duties. The court is basically saying, look, when Balkenite agreed to take Maurice back under that protective order, even with all those rules, she took on certain responsibilities. It wasn't just a parent-child relationship anymore. There was this legal agreement, and it put her in a position kind of like a custodian who answers to the court.
So the court's saying it's not just about being a mom here. It's about this specific legal agreement she made.
Right. She agreed to specific conditions to ensure Maurice's safety. And part of that agreement, according to the court, was being accountable to the court for his well-being. By accepting the protective order, she accepted those conditions. So, you know, the typical parent-child dynamic, well, it gets kind of complicated when you throw a court order into the mix.
Okay, so the first point is about Balkenite taking on these specific legal duties.
Got it. Now, what about the second point? Why else did the Supreme Court side with the state?
Okay, so the second point, this is all about the bigger picture. The court is saying that child welfare cases, they aren't the same as criminal cases. They're civil proceedings, and the main goal is to protect kids. It's a non-criminal regulatory regime. That's how they put it. And when it comes to this kind of system, well, the court's thinking is the Fifth Amendment, yeah, it applies, but it's a bit more limited.
So the court is saying, look, the state isn't trying to throw Balkenite in jail with this order. Their focus is on protecting Maurice. It's about the kid's safety, not about building a criminal case.
Exactly. It's not about punishment. It's about protection. And the court went on to explain the difference between, like, actually saying something incriminating, you know, like confessing to a crime, which is considered testimonial, versus doing something, a physical act. They're saying just bringing Maurice to court, that's an act. It's not the same as Balkenite saying, hey, I did something wrong. But still, even just bringing him to court, it means she knows where he is. She has control over him. Isn't that kind of self-incriminating in itself?
That's a valid point. And the court even acknowledged that there is a risk of self-incrimination here. But they weighed that risk against the state's interest in protecting Maurice. And in this case, they decided the state's interest was more important. They actually referred to another case, Shapiro v. United States, which is all about this thing called the required records doctrine.
All right, time for a little legal sidetrack here. For those of us who aren't quite lawyers yet, can you break down this required records doctrine thing and how it applies here?
Okay, so think of it like this. Sometimes the government says, hey, if you're doing this particular activity, you've got to keep certain records. The required records doctrine says you can't just refuse to hand over those records by saying, oh, it might incriminate me. The idea is if you're taking part in that activity, you're agreeing to play by their rules, records, and all. In this case, the Supreme Court is drawing a parallel. They're saying, look, Balkenite accepted this court order. She's in this system now. That comes with certain obligations, including producing Maurice when the court asks.
So they're saying it's like she's agreed to these specific rules by accepting the court order. Okay, that makes sense. So big picture, the majority of the Supreme Court, they're saying, protecting the child trumps Balkenite's Fifth Amendment argument in this case. But, and this is a big but, Justice Marshall, he was not on board. He wrote this whole dissenting opinion where he really lays out his disagreement.
Oh, yeah, he did not hold back. Justice Marshall was seriously concerned about the implications of this ruling. He felt like the majority's decision could put a big dent in Fifth Amendment protections, especially in cases where parents are already under suspicion.
So what were Justice Marshall's main issues with the ruling?
He had two big ones. The first was this. He said there's a difference between a parent, even a parent under a court order, and like a random person holding records for a company. You know, in those collective entity cases where the Fifth Amendment has been limited, he's saying Balkenite is Maurice's mom. That relationship, that legal connection, that changes things. You can't just treat her like any other custodian.
So he's arguing that being a parent comes with certain rights that need to be taken into account.
Exactly. And his second big point was that Maryland's child protection system, well, he didn't see it as this neutral thing the majority described. He saw it as a system that specifically targets parents who they already think might be abusing or neglecting their kids. And that, to him, blurred the lines between a civil child welfare case and a potential criminal case down the road.
So he's saying you can't pretend Like, the possibility of criminal charges isn't looming in the background here. It's like the system is already geared towards suspecting the parents.
That's his argument. He's saying if the state is already thinking about criminal charges, then forcing a parent to produce a child, that's practically handing them evidence on a silver platter.
And I remember you saying that Justice Marshall was also big on taking things case by case when it comes to the risk of self-incrimination.
Yeah, he wasn't happy with this blanket rule the majority was setting down. Mm. He wanted courts to really look at each individual case and decide, okay, how likely is it that this specific action, producing the child, will lead to self-incrimination for this specific parent? He wanted a more nuanced approach.
It's like he's saying, hold on, let's not get ahead of ourselves. We need to consider the individual circumstances here, not just apply a one-size-fits-all rule. So this is a big decision, a lot to unpack. It sets a pretty significant precedent. What are the main takeaways from Bonk Night? What does it mean for how we understand the Fifth Amendment moving forward?
Well, the main takeaway, it definitely narrows the scope of the Fifth Amendment, at least when it comes to these child welfare cases where there's a court order involved, where the parent has agreed to certain conditions. It's basically saying in these situations, the court can make you produce the child, even if you're worried it might get you in trouble, legally speaking. This is a huge deal for future lawyers, you know, because it shows how even fundamental constitutional rights, they have limits.
In the whole regulatory context thing, that seems to be key here. The court really leaned on the fact that child welfare is about protecting kids, not about throwing parents in jail.
Absolutely. The court's whole logic hinges on the idea that the state's primary goal is a legitimate public interest, like child safety, not just trying to score a conviction. But like we talked about, Justice Marshall's dissent brings up some serious concerns about how this principle plays out in real life, you know, especially when the system itself seems to be targeting parents who might be doing something wrong. This kind of tension, this is something you'll see over and over again in law, these competing interests.
It's a good reminder that law is rarely simple, black and white. There are always these gray areas, these tough calls. And speaking of tough calls, you mentioned earlier that the Supreme Court didn't actually answer a pretty important question in this case, something about whether the act of producing the child or information that comes from that can be used against the parent later on in a criminal case.
Yeah, that's a big one. They basically said, we're not deciding that right now. So a parent might have to produce their child because of Bonk Night, but that doesn't automatically mean the state can then turn around and use that act as evidence in a criminal trial. That's still up in the air, legally speaking.
So it's like they cleared up one part of the law, but they also left this other part kind of hanging. It's a good reminder that even Supreme Court decisions, they don't always tie everything up in a neat little bow.
That's the thing about law. It's constantly evolving. Bonk Night, it gives us some answers, but it also raises new questions. It shows just how complicated things get when you're trying to balance individual rights with the state's power, especially when a child's safety is on the line.
It's complicated, that's for sure. So to wrap up our deep dive into Baltimore City DSS v. Bonk Night, the big takeaway is this. Fifth Amendment, yeah, it's important, but it's not a get-out-of-jail-free card, especially when it comes to child welfare cases. But we got to remember Justice Marshall's warnings, too. You know, he's saying, hey, let's make sure this system isn't being used to unfairly target parents, to basically sidestep their constitutional rights. This case, it's a reminder that striking that balance, protecting kids while also upholding individual rights, that's a constant struggle.
Couldn't have said it better myself. Bonk Night, it's a landmark case, no doubt about it. And for all you future lawyers out there, cases like this, they'll keep you thinking, keep you debating long after you graduate. Because this is the kind of stuff, these fundamental questions, they're at the heart of our legal system.
And they're questions we're all going to have to grapple with at some point, lawyers or not. So to end on a bit of a cliffhanger, a thought to chew on. How far should the state's power go when it comes to protecting children? And how do we make sure individual rights aren't trampled in the process? Those are tough questions. But they're worth asking, worth debating, because the answers, they affect real people's lives. That's all for today's deep dive. Thanks for listening.